Hi, this is Floyd Webb in Chicago. I'm a film producer. I'm going to be on the True Brothers tonight. You're listening to the True Brothers Radio with Ray and Devon. If you're not listening to the True Brothers, the truth ain't in you.
Some of it you're going to like, some of it you ain't. Tired of hearing fools complaining in barber chairs and beauty shops.
This is True Brothers Radio.
More like it.
If you're not listening to the True Brothers, then the truth ain't in you.
True Brothers Radio. Hello, everybody. Happy Monday. I hope everybody had a good weekend like we did. Didn't you have a good weekend? I had a great weekend,
no, sir,
man. My weekend
not.
Was
Whatever.
Awesome. I am ready to do the show. So I'm Ray.
And I'm Devon.
And we are the Truth Brothers. The number to give us a call is 818-514-1202. That's 818-514-1202.
And as always, you guys know you can hit us up at our email at wewanttruth@att.net. And truth is spelled T-R-U-F. And we got to remember the other email, which is you got me messing up now. TruthBrosRadio@gmail.com. There you go.
There you go. And we got the chat room opened up, and it's doors are wide open. Come on in and start making your comments.
This is be blowing me, man. You say that I'm like, the doors are wide open.
It's a chat room. So the room got to have doors.
So does the pearly gates. I don't know.
Jesus
take the wheel. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, man. So what's going on? How was your weekend since you didn't seem to have a great
one? Yeah, it was garbage, man. I had a Fladookie weekend. I didn't like it. It was a Fladookie.
There it is.
Wet
Fladookie.
Nah, it was
dry.
It was diarrhea Fladookie.
That's wet.
Yeah. But it got that texture you like. I'm just there, man. I had this was a brain popping weekend. It made
tried your patience.
It was Think Bus. I had a Think Bus Thursday.
Yeah. My weekend was excellent. Weekend was very nice. The week, of course, everybody knows we missed last week.
Yeah,
because decided to get hit with a super blizzard.
Right.
Here's what's messed. You get a blizzard on Monday, mm-hmm. 50 degrees on Wednesday,
yep.
Torrential rain on Thursday,
yeah.
and now all the snow is dang near gone by Saturday.
Because the sunshine, lollipops, rainbows.
Yeah.
Ain't that a song? Sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows, everything that's what I...
But we got to get one of them on the show to have that's an episode.
I don't know. But anyway, man, let me see. Well, after you just say yours, so boom, Thursday lays up into my weekend. That's what I have to say.
Thursday is when the Fladookie starts.
The diarrhea Fladookie.
Here we go.
So Thursday kicks off everything as far as, hey, we're going to start this diarrhea slide, and look who's at the bottom with his mouth open. That would be me.
That would be you.
That would be me.
Norbert.
I was Norbert.
You had the Norbert weekend.
And then, I mean, between my son catching a cold, dealing with him, and other drama. It's just,
right.
But, I mean, everything's cool now because everybody's back where they belong. We'll just leave it at that. We'll leave
back
it at
in their places.
Everybody's back in their place right
gotcha.
Now.
Gotcha.
Profit sharing.
There it is. Well, all right, don't even go there.
Yeah, we're not going to get into that.
I heard we got the Beatles treatment this weekend.
Yeah.
Yoko Ono.
Don't like Ringo or the rest.
that George is too quiet. I don't like him. Paul thinks he's pretty.
You know, you're the leader. You're the leader, Yoko.
She gave you the green knitted cap,
dude,
from the monkey.
Yes.
You're the yes. Mike was the leader. Mike had a green summertime green knitted cap here. You know why? Because you're eclectic like that.
You're the leader.
There you go.
Come here.
You don't need him.
Yeah, you're David Ruffin. You don't need you're David Ruffin.
Now go out.
Those
there.
Are the temptations.
Sing that straighten it out.
I'm tired.
I'm sad. Who we hollering at, man?
All right. We got to holler at a few people today, so y'all bear with me. It's a page and a half. Thanks to everybody, man, catching on the Truth Brothers page and listening and getting on our Instagram, all our pages, man. We appreciate that. Ebony Singleton, Destiny Hampton, Kelly Regina Todd, Casey Jacobs, my boy, had a show in Cali. Heard he told a thing down. Good all luck, right. Man. Appreciate that. Nene
don't
and,
be looking. Don't be a looking ass.
Yo, don't be looking out your window like Malcolm with your rifle.
Wow.
We'll get into that.
Yes.
Got to shout out the Nene and Momo show, man.
Yes.
Definitely. They they doing that thing. They're holding on.
And they
strong.
Gave us some love.
Yes.
And that's nice.
Yes, we really appreciate that. Martez Henderson, my boy, went down to Atlanta. Man, hope he comes back home safe.
With things intact.
Oh, man.
They drilling.
Oh.
They go drilling in it.
They likes to get you, catch you slipping in Atlanta. And he's not the one to be caught slipping down south no more. We'll leave it at that. Sosa, come home, bro. Toby Jones. Bianca Radford. Got to shout her out. Sade Walton. Sylvia Jackson. Deidre Hughley, the author we will be having on. I think she's going to be talking about her book soon, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She like to write them naked books.
Yeah, them zangs. As I solely stroked the shaft, he exploded in my eye. I called it I come. He called it you need to come. Either way. Whatever.
All right.
At least here we. It's going to be that type of day. I'm there. Talitha Mathis. Got to shout out Art Cofield, Latasha Vons. Got to shout out and tell her get well soon. Man, her, she caught that hen
one. Yeah, she got that Ebola.
Really?
Yeah.
Not true Ebola, people. You can walk up to her. She just got a bad flu, right? Something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, get well soon from the Truth Brothers, man. We definitely got to shout, say what's up. And to the Crushed Hearts, man. Got to shout out Big Girl. Big love to her. We appreciate her. We love her. And, yeah, man, she's doing big things as well.
Yes, she is. Yes, she is. She's back on the air, and they be.
Now,
Monday through Thursday.
Yeah.
She had blog talk
stroking
nervous.
Stroking the shaft.
Had blog talk nervous.
Now, before.
You ever got your favorite balloon you want blown up? For some reason, she likes blowing up balloons.
Well, no, it ain't for some reason. We know why. I mean, not
I don't get why.
Yeah, I don't get why. People pay to watch the girl blow up balloons. I don't know. It's nothing against her.
No.
I don't get the fetish of getting your balloons blown up.
If there's some ladies out there who want the Truth Brothers to, I guess.
I don't know. Doing things with me in my mouth, I don't like that. We're not, you, yay.
Eat a taco. How about that?
Nope.
Okay. Whatever.
If you want the Truth Brothers to R. Kelly.
No.
I'm there. No. I'm sorry. But before we go into DJ's B-Days, you got a story
you got to tell me. Yes, sir. I got to send a special Truth Brother shout out.
What's that?
To a person that very, very, very close to me. He's my boss.
Boss.
Yeah. Now, everybody knows that you don't see a lot of, we don't have a lot of Budweiser banner ads around the Truth Brothers blog talk page.
Not at all.
So it ain't like the change is actually rolling in. So the Truth Brothers do have to have a day job.
Absolutely.
And the day job, my boss decided to have a let's get to know people session called Know Your People. And
is he black?
Yes, my man,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Whatever.
Oh, here that's we go. Come
yeah.
on.
No, he says he's going around the room and asking people, do you know the other person? So he asked a dude, what do you know about Ray Gage? And the dude only known me for 2 weeks. He don't know. He like, hey, he's a big guy. Always looks angry.
There you go. Yeah, that's
outside
pretty much right.
Of that, and I didn't know. Boss comes out. Yeah, did you know he's got a radio show?
Okay.
And he's like, no. He said, yeah, he's got a Christian radio show, and I hope he's outlined. Yeah, he be outlining Bible verses.
That's what the boss said.
That's what the boss said. That I have a Christian radio show. Call the Splinter Brothers. Hole in the Hands Radio.
Call I Love Jesus. Arms Wide.
Arms Wide.
Okay. Arms Wide Radio.
Yep.
I liked it.
Yep. Called the Crucifixion Truth.
That's right.
Yeah, hey.
The Truth in Our Truth Brothers Radio is spelled with a cross, y'all.
There you go.
And Jesus is there.
So, yeah, I said, okay. I'm sending out a special shout out to my man Leon. He's a good dude.
Yeah.
He's a good dude. And he asked me to become a manager,
right,
to be on his team. I was real flattered with that. But then somehow he thought I was a Bible thumper. So.
And we all love
my
Bible
boss,
thumper.
Leon.
This is for you. Don't know, but he hates the Lord.
That's wrong. Nobody at True Brothers Radio hates the Lord. Right out the gate.
What's that?
Nobody on True Brothers Radio hates the Lord.
They just dropped it.
they just get mad because we ask Christians to think.
You know,
math.
Dude, you know what's crazy? I was actually, before I get to the B-Days again, this whole weekend, I sat down and I had me a George Carlin marathon, man. Like, I went back from the beginning all the way to his last one. And, man, that's one dude I truly, truly miss, man. Like, I swear I had tickets to the show the year he died. He was coming to the Chicago Theater. I was pumped, right?
Yep, I just been told I'm fired.
There you go.
There it is.
But, yeah, and he said one thing that made me like, well, it didn't make me think. It was just, you know, I've seen it before. He said, you tell people that there's an invisible man living in the clouds.
Here
and he
comes.
Saves every.
Here we go.
There's an invisible man living in the clouds that and people and the vast majority of people will just believe you. But
go.
If you tell people that paint is wet, they'll have to touch it to believe it. And I said,
ooh,
go ahead, George.
Yeah, I was gone. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. But yeah, anyway, rest in peace, George Carlin, man. I miss that dude. Man, I miss that dude. I miss that dude like I knew him.
Yeah.
Straight up.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's that. But we got
B-Days.
Yeah,
we got to
do the
B-Days
first,
right.
Real quick. Maybe lose. Here we go. There we is. Tony Smith, Karen Bolden, Maurice White, Tonya Smith Cameron, Tiffany Brown, Nikki Greer, Cindy Patterson Armstrong, Emmanuel Brewster, my uncle Darrell Patrick, basketball cards, Cecilia Robinson, Kevin Norwell, Stacey Barnes Patrick, and Diane Bell. I said it. Let's move forward. And if you're not ready for that, you're ready for this. It's time for what?
This is time, the terrible truth. What?
This is the terrible truth with your terrible anchors, Ray and Devon.
Greetings and salutations. This is Kid Clark of the Terrible Truth. This was the Terrible Truth is brought to you by Uncle's Basketball Cards. Just
nobody knows.
I know. It's esoteric, but all right. My cards got stolen by my uncle, whatever, when I was younger. Whatever.
He just held them for you.
Really?
Yeah, he
held
them.
Because
there you go. There you go. Hey, little man.
Dude.
It's a nice Michael Jordan rookie card.
Michael Jordan.
Hate to see something happen to it. Let old Uncle Blow hold on to it.
I don't care if you're listening. Look.
Sold it for some of that Hoffman. Moving right along. Go ahead. Yeah, we ain't going to get in trouble.
Look at you out here on a nasty trip. Anyway. Good. Anyway, man, I'm Man killed by his girlfriend after posting his Instagram hashtag Woman Crush Wednesday. I don't know.
Crush has done it again.
You don't know what Woman Crush Wednesday is?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
We talked about
yeah,
it. She got crushing after dark on Thursday.
Oh, well, there it is. But, you know, for those who don't know, we do have a lot of people who are not out in the social media world like that. But every Wednesday, people, guys mainly, and some lesbians, got a lot of lesbians, put up a picture of a woman with the hashtag WCW, which is their woman crush. I've done it with Gopel, and I've done it with Lettucey. I've done it with the girl from Flavor of Love, Prancer. Whatever. I thought, man, she's fine.
Yeah, I got you.
But anyway, Chicago, 26-year-old. Oh, yeah, that was
yep.
It.
Here
26-year-old Deron Jacobs was killed by his girlfriend Thursday morning after he allegedly tweeted his woman crush Wednesday.
On a Wednesday.
Thursday morning because she saw it. Which is a popular hashtag, WCW or Woman Crush Wednesday, which trends on Instagram every Wednesday. And they ain't lying. Deron Jacobs was stabbed to death by his girlfriend Rachel Edwardson, age 24, while he was asleep in their apartment they both shared.
Yep. He got woke up with...
sound. We need that. That's because she stabbed him. Yeah, I can't make the noise. Friends of the two say that they never show any external relationship problems and seem to be very happy with each other.
Until he went on did a hashtag.
Hey, baby, you like my WCW? Nope, but you gonna like this knife. According to the close friend of the couple, there was no violence between the two, but just regular arguments that most couples go through. When the police arrived at the crime scene, Jacobs was already dead in a bed, laying in a pool of blood with his iPhone still in his hand.
But wait!
Tragic.
He saved it.
Wait, baby!
No, if you're going to stab me, don't touch the phone. It's my WCW. Edwards was found, the woman was found by police in the bathtub, face down with her hands behind her back, waiting for the police to
just
arrest her.
Come and get me. It was worth it. It was so worth it.
The man's best friend since middle school made a public statement saying, I was texting my boy Deron, oh, we finna go knock her. Here we
yeah.
go.
I was texting my boy Deron all weekend.
When he sent me the iMessage of the girl, this is what it says. Of the girl he was going to post. All right, y'all got to excuse me. I'm trying to say it the way he said it, but I'm not ignorant. Okay. I was texting my boy Deron when he sent me a iMessage of the girl he was going to put up the post of his woman crush. It was.
That's your crush? No, man, that's my good.
That's my good, dog. No, no, my good. It was a chick
man,
he DM'd.
Your girl ain't gonna like what you put on there, man.
Man, skip my good. This my good. These knockers. It was a
yeah, blow by that first break. Whatever.
It was a
man, your girl ain't gonna like what you put on there, man, with that girl.
What? Cuz, that ain't my girl. Don't care about that girl. This my girl.
Tell me he didn't just say that.
No, man. My girl.
It was a
Why is it uncool to speak English?
Dude, I don't know.
Girl.
Nah,
girl.
Girl. My girl.
Saying my girl means you just, I don't want a job. I don't want a job.
You
want
to work here? You got girl?
I like girl.
You ain't got no girls. I can't work flipping your patties at the Krabby Patty. Yep.
Leon, wait till tomorrow. Man.
I'm finna smash old girl.
I'ma see that girl, man.
With the red hair.
Yep.
It was a chick he DM'd frequently and got, well, DM'd his direct messages.
There it
For
is.
Those who don't, because they done said DMs.
Damn. Who damn?
He DM'd frequently and got news from nudes. news people. Tit pics is what we call them.
Dog, them my girls.
He got news from, but she didn't even live in our state. I can't understand. This dude's saying this. These are quotes. I can't understand.
He down there in Louisiana.
We here in Chi-Town, Chi-Rock, Drillinoise. Get up. I can't understand why his girl would kill him over posting a photo on Instagram. Y'all know what I mean? This is what he said.
You big dummy.
The murder is being investigated for any other potential evidence or information regarding the situation to determine if there were other motives.
Other motives.
What?
Like, because he might have been he might have been showing pics back.
Does it matter?
Okay. Yeah, they might. Hey, they might have. We got what is it? Woman Crush Wednesday.
Yeah, they Woman, got Man
right,
Crush.
They
Monday.
They got Ding Dong Tuesday. I don't know.
They got Man Crush Mondays. We got Woman Crush Wednesdays. It's Throwback Thursdays. All type of stuff. Whatever. The murder's been investigated.
Yeah, but it ain't no read a book day. It's never. It ain't. Nothing rhymes with education. Nothing rhymes with education or school.
It ain't
nothing.
It ain't a school.
Nothing for libraries.
Ain't
no.
Ain't a good test Tuesday. You won't.
Nope. Good grades Wednesday. No.
There will never be a great test Tuesday.
Boy,
no.
If it ain't an expulsion Friday. Yeah.
The murder is being investigated for any other potential evidence information regarding the situation to determine if there were any other motives as to why Edwardson would commit such a crime. Facebook friends of Jacobs also mentioned that Edwardson, the girl, had a self-esteem issues because she was dark-skinned and slightly overweight, and that Jacobs had a post on his Instagram and Facebook status which read, "I love me a badass red bone."
There it is. That.
If found guilty,
No.
Lucifer, light up the morning. I'm gonna take you out of earth. Lucifer, light up the morning.
Top of the morning to you. Do you see what this ungrateful nugget put on his post? Redbone. Now look at you. And Lucifer holds a mirror up to her. You're chocolate and thick. And look at what he put up there. Kim Kardashian. You going to take that?
You ain't nothing without me. You without me is nothing.
You're going to let him do you like that?
Now let me use your cup.
I'm going to give you this Ginsu and go on and handle your business. Lou out.
Damn it, open my floor door.
Red Fox, open. You instantly just throw me on the.
Red Fox is working the floor
yes,
door.
Yes, he is. Oh, Red's there.
Yo, Red Fox is. Oh, yeah. Red, ladies and gentlemen, Red Fox is in hell. Believe that.
That's what it is?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Well, that is. I was going to say George Carlin, but he didn't believe.
He wouldn't have, right. He wouldn't have been. He'd like, get out. He'd have walked out. Like, get out of here.
I'm sorry. But yeah, Red Fox
there
is down
go.
There. It's the big
up Leon Christian Radio. There you go.
Oh, that's nice.
That is as Christian-y as we get.
But long story short, Shorty going to be facing first-degree murder and could get life in prison. Should she get...
They're not going to give her life.
Nah, not for
they
a
don't
woman
give
crush.
No, they, you did us a favor.
Yeah.
Now,
they're
going to give them give
hey,
her
they
life.
Giving people shooting kids at girl gas stations the time off, so why not?
He got more time for missing than he got for the person he hit. He got more time. All the time he got was for all the shots he missed.
If
you see what you did to that Mustang. That's wrong.
That was a classic.
Not Jordan a person Davis. You hit. Gotcha.
That's Jordan. He probably was on his way to buy some. Don't matter.
That is just, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Don't like
being
it.
Being black. Being black in America. It's
are you disrespected yet? That's my question.
Dude, it's
are you disrespected?
My question
yet?
Is it really okay to kill black kids in America? That's the question that I would want to ask. Is that okay? Are y'all not concerned about your little boys coming up?
Here's what's messed up.
What you got?
This ass, and that's what
he said.
He's an ass. This ass went to his son's wedding reception. Son don't like him. Nobody in the family likes him. He's daddy it.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah. He went to his son's wedding reception. Nobody was messing with him. He leaves early, got an attitude when he makes his way over to the slop and lick.
The slop and lick, man.
And he decided to in and wants to get him a six pack. And there's some people playing Lil Wayne in the car.
Looking ass Nick. I mean, yes.
Yeah.
Playing Nicki Minaj.
Yeah. He turned that crap down. Hey, old man, leave us alone.
We're not bothering you, sir. Oh,
I'm just coming back from my graduation.
I've made it. I'm on my way out.
Makes me sick.
No, you know what's makes crazy? I heard.
And then, no. Shot it up. Took his behind home and cracked open a six pack. Didn't call or nothing. Waited till they come knocking on it. What did I do?
Sir?
What did I do?
I did the world a favor, is what he said. You know what I found when I was watching the trial or whatever? Dude. They said it was already premeditated because he had to load the gun.
Yes.
The gun
know how to stop this music.
It wasn't like it was already loaded. He went to the car. It took him to load this because you could have put one in there and just said, all right, not saying that he should have.
How about just go about your business?
He clipped, put in, pulled, and said, all right, we at the range.
Yeah.
And fired.
And just let him go.
And he missed.
And had to go. I was scared. Because I asked him to turn it down.
Now, let me ask you this. Did you hear about was he a Marine? Or down in Florida, stood his ground, didn't kill nobody, 25 years.
Oh, I know. I know. He looked like me.
Probably.
Yeah.
But the thing was,
let me go to Florida, and there's a whole bunch of kids, and they kill soul.
Oh, yeah. No, not
turn
kids.
Turn that Robin Thicke off.
Not kids. You can't say kids. You got to say the Bradys. You got to let the Bradys
be in
the car.
Yeah, let the Bradys be in the car. Yeah. Oh, Marsha just got a license.
Yeah.
Let me go ham. Talk about I was scared.
No, because... See, they don't appear.
Not going to happen.
It's just a bunch of little Hueys in the car, and he decides I'm going to lay off.
Yeah.
What got me was your man goes down, and he gets time for firing, not for the killing. My man gets 25. They were jumping him. The bro was getting jumped.
The Marine.
Yeah.
And really jumping a Marine is not wise.
But the thing was, he was getting ready. You know what? Bam, bam. He eased them off.
Yep. Let me just, hey, leave me alone.
I just want to eat mistake. I want to eat mistake. Have me a good time. I don't want to go Reacher. They goes back at it. My man said.
He goes Jack Reacher on him.
Pow, pow. Nobody gets hit. Woo. Sir, drop your gun. Why did you shoot the dude? Even the guy who said, yo, we initiated.
No, you didn't, son. You were standing your ground in reverse. You was reverse standing your ground.
The dude said.
But this bully.
Yeah, but they used
defending my country, my ass. That bully.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what happened. The man, the dude who said, yo, we attacked him. We did. All of us attacked him. No, 25 for him. Hammer. Or, my bad, what's that, the gallop? What do I call it?
The gavel.
Yeah, the
gavel. Yeah.
I'm tired.
And when he shot in the air, scattered the kids. Police came out of nowhere like, yep. your black behind on the ground.
And they, after they locked him up, they jumped in the air and paused. America! Oh, I hate the Joes. I'm tired, man. I'm tired of all the bull. I'm
already.
Tired. This morning, I'm there.
I got you.
Yeah, but anyway, we got to take us a break. I'm sure y'all need one, too.
After that.
We'll be right back, man. Truth Brothers Radio.
I got a million ways to get it. Choose one. Hey, bring it back, bring it back. Now double your money.
Truth Brothers Radio.
Brothers Radio.
It's not about anything else.
Go to your room and lock the door. Cause when you try it once, you won't try it some more.
Try it some more.
Time doesn't matter and that's a fact. It might be small, but it's a big impact.
Oh.
Bust a nut, bust a nut. Grab a bag of corn nuts and bust a nut. Lightly dust it and part as well. Enjoy yourself, we won't tell. Everybody does it. Like it a lot. You can do it at school, just don't get caught. It takes a few minutes if you don't delay. Take your time, make your best all day.
Bust a nut, bust a nut. Grab a bag of cold nuts and bust a nut. Lightly toasted and hard as well.
Enjoy yourself, we won't tell.
Corn Nuts, an intensely crunchy corn snack, comes in 7 nut-busting flavors. Bust a nut at the convenience store.
Truth Brothers Radio.
I keep the ass popping like the locks on the Benz. After the after party, we'll be getting it in. Pause for a drink, then we cutting again.
Truth Brothers Radio. Yeah, my man went to the store, got caught busting the nut, and got arrested.
Don't get word to the wise if you're at school. Don't get caught with
don't
your hands on your corn nuts.
Don't get caught.
They're lightly
with your hands.
Toasted. Yes, they are. But shouts out to Ebony Singleton, man. Hit us up saying we are hilarious. They over there cracking up. So they over there busting guts and they busting nuts over there.
Oh man. Oh. You know, when we did our football shows, we had our dads on.
Right.
My dad was, when we got off the air, my dad was like, where the hell do y'all get y'all sponsors?
Because I don't think that's for the children. That's not for the children, is it? Because I don't, wait, hold on. Busting nuts. Well, they're actually busting a bag of nuts.
Exactly.
Though. Whatever. I like corn nuts.
Here's one for you.
Yeah, go ahead.
I got to get her name right.
Here we go. Undunga.
No. Torana.
Oh,
Torana.
Yeah. Here we
like
go.
Rihanna. Put Toy in front of
Toriana.
Toriana. There it is. Thank you.
Yeah,
Toriana
I deal with,
Smith.
I deal with nothing.
Hates kids. Mm-hmm. Love deals.
Oh, yeah. I heard. Bring it on. I heard about this one.
Toriana Smith. Had a great day shopping last Thursday.
Yep.
The night before, she had drinks with her friend at a Harvey, Illinois home. Harvey.
Where the homeless live. Come on, man. Here we go.
Where the homeless roam.
Harvey, home of the homeless.
That's wrong.
I hate Harvey.
Yeah. She spent the night with a 3-month-year-old baby in the guest room. Thursday morning, she woke up. Dressed up baby, put him in a stroller, and went shopping.
Mm-hmm.
It's only one small problem. The baby was dead.
Yes, sir. Heard all
again,
about it.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, every story we read in The Terrible Truth is 100% real. This is 100% real.
It's in there.
Apparently, Smith was having such a good time drinking with her pals Wednesday night that she was in no mood to deal with the crying infant.
I ain't got time. Ain't nobody
Shut up.
Got time
ain't nobody
for that.
Got time for that.
We need that drop. Oh,
I'm trying to get it in.
Oh, and Sweet Daddy's coming. Over.
Ooh.
Whatever.
Ooh.
And it ain't your daddy,
yeah.
So don't cry.
Wow.
Whatever. I'm tired.
Yeah, yeah. So she was in no mood to deal with the crying infant. So she beat and suffocated the baby before falling asleep. She forgot about that part.
Oh, well, of course.
That is one way to shut up the kid.
Of course. Who don't like strangling a kid to be keep him quiet?
Really?
Somebody hand me that. Somebody hand me the pillow pet. I'm going to get him quiet.
That pillow pet.
I need the pillow pet. Nah, give me the
big one. Give
yeah,
me the elephant.
The elephant.
Give
open
me
him
the
up.
Elephant.
Put the tusk in his mouth.
Smith's day of good fortune came to an end when she stopped at a neighbor's home after going home after a neighbor's home after going shopping with her deceased baby.
He's been quiet
all day.
I woke him up, got him dressed, gave him a bath. He's been stiff as a board, but
why don't he be like this all the time? The neighbor noticed the baby wasn't breathing and saw blood in the blanket. The neighbor called 911, who brought the baby to the hospital where he was apparently dead on arrival. Prosecutors alleged that the baby was dead for like 14 hours.
Yep. That'll keep him quiet.
Right. Smith doesn't regret the hours of quality shopping she experienced pushing around a dead baby in a stroller.
No.
This is a quote.
Of course.
This is a quote.
Here we go.
This is what she said. This isn't the truth, brothers. This is what she said.
What she run off.
Check it out. The deals I got on tops and shoes were unbelievable.
They're slashing prices and everything must go.
They rolling them back like it was yesterday. She said it was like I picked the best day ever to go shopping. I saved so much money.
And I didn't even switch to Geico. Nah, 15 minutes or less. Puh. That's what she Zamora. You think I got this tax return for nothing?
Let me tell you something.
I hate her.
Oh, yeah. Oh, 818-514-1202.
This chick says.
Who don't hate her?
This chick says, they were slashing prices, so I slashed his throat. Whatever. Either way. Whatever. That's her life.
You big dummy.
She did that. So whatever. I have no pity for her. None.
Now,
don't get me wrong.
No.
I
say lethal injection is too good for her.
I say, well, not what I say.
What you say?
Nah, because
say it.
Yeah, you can't. What I'm thinking, you can't say over there. So we'll let that
partially.
Ride. Not even a little bit. I got a warped mind, and yeah, I mean, like, don't get my shorty cries for no reason. And that's irritating me. Hell, you called me and heard it, but he was sick, so we gave him a pass.
Of course, he was sick.
I've been on
Earth a year. I don't know why I feel this way.
No,
I just don't like it.
But I'm saying before that, he got this thing where he like, you know what? I see shit.
I ain't getting enough attention.
There you go. So he'll cry for no reason, but I mean, I found something that keeps him quiet. So
yeah,
whatever.
I'm not even done.
I ain't even punching.
She said he was so good and quiet, he let mama shop and didn't fuss.
Cause he's a baby and he loves his mama. After our Hogan leg dropped him,
she said, "I never loved him as much as I did that day."
Cause he was quiet.
And this is an actual quote. She's got to be deranged.
A prison. Ooh.
She said, dead babies are much easier to deal with.
That's what she said. There you go. Ball that up.
I swear. That's in the terrible truth. Go to our Facebook page. You will find it in there.
Well, you got to go to the group, the Terrible Truth group that's on Facebook. You know, just go on your Facebook, hit that search engine, Terrible Truth, T-R-U-F, all of our stories. Go ahead, join in. You can find them all there.
She,
A prison gangbang is what she needs.
No. Yes. No, that's too good for her.
Really?
I want to tie her. I want to tie her to the back of a bulldozer.
Yeah.
And just run it into a mountain.
You know what I want to do? I want to toss her in a wood chipper. There you go. That's. I just want to toss
too
her
good
in a wood.
For.
Too good?
Too, I say chop off every limb, reattach it, wait till she gets feeling back in them, and chop them off again.
You know what? Nah, that's
she's
still
disgusting.
Too good. That's still too good.
That's still too good.
I say sew her vagina short.
Yeah, here we go. We're it. Yep.
Go ahead.
You want to sew her clothes.
Yeah,
and
I want
to keep feeding her.
Yeah.
And feeding her.
Nah, give her water. I don't want to keep feeding her. Sew that vagina shut and give her water. Waterboard.
We here at the Truth Brothers do apologize for the inappropriate comments that were... But damn it. Sorry.
Whatever.
All right. Yeah, moving right along, because, yeah, that's enough.
Yeah,
that's
depressing.
That's depressing.
That made my liver hurt. So, anyway, on to Devon's next story. Pull that out there. There, we can go with this. I got so many.
And don't forget to join us in the second hour.
Oh,
we are all there.
Yeah, we
snowstorm just done blew us
yeah.
apart. When we will be having veteran filmmaker and producer
Floyd
Webb on the show as we talk about black movies. We haven't forgot about that, people.
And
we're just so happy
we
to be
want
back.
Everybody to get in because I know y'all want to get on the Tyler. Who's getting the talk show? Have you heard about that? On the old
Madea
network.
Madea Talk.
Madea pulling out the D. Madea.
D-Talk with Tyler. Crossing swords everywhere. Oh, my God.
Okay.
Oh, God. Pulling that. Tyler presents D-Talk. Saddle up, boys. Let's talk some real talk.
Let's talk about the D. Madea pulling out the D. Oh, they're going to hate us. And we don't hate Tyler, people. We don't hate him.
Oh,
he just...
Tyler. Need a makeover? Let Madea show you how.
Nobody puts on makeup.
I came looking for man's butt.
Oh, that's the way we like it. First thing we got to do is get rid of that pesky penis.
First off, you don't want to go lumping up when you're going out on a night on the town. Madea gonna give you tips for tucking.
Coming up next, Madea Talk. Tips for tucking. Tucking tips. Oh, tuck. Okay.
Going to that prom. Don't let a pesky erection ruin your prom. You don't want him to know till later.
It's Friday folding, y'all. That's
Oh, my God. Really?
Oh, man.
The dude's right after the half and half night. Madea's talking late night on OWN.
Oh, my God.
Now I kiss you, you orange flavor motherfucker.
Get merged. Okay.
Why, people? Why? Why do y'all keep falling for the same okey-doke?
The Chitlin Circuit is there.
Why?
I don't know, man. They love Tyler. He has his Perry part.
If you love Madea's Christmas, you're gonna love her talking.
Madea.
Can Tyler Perry give you dating tips?
No, absolutely not. No. Ask a ding dang along.
Weightlifting with Tyler.
Yeah, ladies. Now we're gonna give you tips for pulling. You gotta
and plucking.
You got to start with your finger grip. That'll get them. No, I can't have it. Like, look.
Y'all going to take relationship issues from a man who don't date
women. Women. Alex Crossdresser. Y'all remember that? Yes, it's real.
818-514-1202. Call in. Tell us the virtues of a Tyler Perry talk show.
Look, man. It's great.
You loved his movies.
You'll love
now hear him talk. Queen Latifah, watch out.
Yeah.
Tyler's coming.
Oprah's learning up a new Oprah. He's a new Oprah. He's the Oprah in making.
Oh, God.
First off, I've never seen so many people swarm over that half and half knots. I tried to stomach 5 minutes of that.
I tried.
And I
didn't
couldn't
get far.
Dude, it
ain't even a bad soap opera. It's just bad.
I'm like, I don't want to know the name.
No, I won't marry you.
Yeah. And if I did, my brother is here.
Here. Over. There.
Like, it's I want to be young and restless, but it's
dumb and listless.
Yeah, it's dirty.
Yeah.
It's half.
Yeah.
Dude, it's talent. Half and none of you got it. It's not even half and half not. It's just, I don't understand the fascination with that. I don't get the what's the other one? Love Thy Neighbor with Switch Booty Grandma.
Love Thy Neighbor with the Funky Grandma.
Oh, I percolate. Yeah. Just, you know.
Watch her twerk, y'all. Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I can't wait till Mr. Webb calls in and we get, because there's so many to black movies that are not getting any light because we keep making the same.
Settling. Nobody wants to rate. I don't want to say nobody. I think we've said this on the show before, and it's still relevant. The reason we bag on Tyler, I guess, is because Tyler does not raise the bar, and he has what I like to say. He has responsibility now, where it's your responsibility to take everybody that you got in your Perry party and bring him up a notch.
You anointed him. You guys anointed him as the, because we can only have one, I guess.
Yeah.
He's the black director.
Filmmaker, producer.
You only get one, and it's him. Now, I was going to mention this later, but this is a good time to say, you know, an iconic filmmaker died today.
Yes.
Harold Ramis died today, this morning, at 69 years old.
Yeah.
The litany of films that he has made, and hey, he started off making low budget comedies,
mm-hmm.
just like Tyler.
Made a few movies.
He made Ghostbusters,
Strike, yep.
Groundhog's Day,
mm-hmm.
National Lampoon's Vacation. But the lowest budget of them all was Caddyshack.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, you know he did Caddyshack.
No, I know he did it. I know that was the lowest budget, though.
But I'm just saying, yeah, that's where he, you know.
Yeah, I know.
You talking about every movie, he just kept evolving, getting better,
dude,
and better and better and better.
You know, I don't want to cut you off, but you know what gets me? Dude, every actor that started there and then just said, you know what, I'm going to take this act thing, I'm going to go direct. Ron Howard is a genius.
Yes.
That dude is a...
Yes.
Y'all might know Ron Howard from Andy Griffin. Happy Days. On until... Did y'all
know? Not most of these kids. I bet most of our audience know him as a filmmaker.
Yeah.
But they know Apollo 13. They know the big budget. But do you know, to get his foot in the door as a director, when he was hot on Happy Days,
yeah,
someone presented him with a B movie deal,
uh-huh,
for two movies.
Yep, yep.
They just wanted to capitalize on him being popular on Happy Days.
Mm-hmm.
He say, "Oh, I'll do your B movie, no problem. I get to direct it though."
Right.
And they like, yeah, okay, but he wanted to get his feet wet directing. Directed two B movies. One was called Eat My Dust. I forget what the other one was called. I remember seeing it as a kid.
It was a race movie.
Both of them was like,
yeah,
a race movie.
Yeah, I know. I can't remember.
And he used that to get his feet wet directing, to feel what it was like so he could learn. Then he started directing episodes of Happy Days.
Dude, that...
Then he said, okay, that's it for the acting.
Because he done it. Child star, teen star.
Crossed over.
Yeah. It's cool. I'm good now. But what's crazy is I saw Rush with Chris.
Yes.
Dude, that is off the chain.
Yes.
He directed that.
But he's big time now.
I mean, he's
on par
but
with
Spielberg
and all of them.
The Da Vinci Code.
Right.
Just go down. That's movie making.
That's what I'm getting at. The man started off from Caddyshack. He ended up doing Analyze This, Analyze That.
Yeah.
That's at the height of his, you know, Harold Ramis, at the height of his movie making. But this is an evolution.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't box himself in. He grew. That's all we're asking for Tyler Perry. Grow, man.
Like, yeah, it's, look, grow. Nobody won't say the dude's not. The dude has talent. He's just, I don't know if he's scared to step out of that box or he's scared on what he might do to his fans for stepping out of that box. I don't know what it is.
What about, how about some of you Tyler Perry people who love everything he do, some of you, not saying all of you, of course, some of you are only happy because he's giving you the same crap over and over. He's giving you what's in your comfort zone. And if he steps outside the box, because I'll give him this, the two lowest budget movies he had was two message movies, Daddy's Little Girl. Y'all was like, nope, he ain't in a dress.
I
like the concept. The actual movie didn't like. I like the concept.
The ending was kind of it was kind of booty.
Yeah,
but
I stepped in one day coming in from work,
right,
and my stepdaughter was watching it, and I think I seen the scene where he was in court.
Yeah, and they were shafting him,
and it struck me. You know why?
Right,
it hit me. I was like, what is this? This is a Tyler Perry movie. So I T-bolt my thing,
right,
to catch it the next time it came on. And then I sat to him, like, this is terrible. But
right,
love the concept.
Right.
You didn't support it. It don't matter that it's terrible. Most of this stuff is terrible, and you flock to see it. So
yeah,
the fact that it's terrible don't mean nothing. His core supporters didn't go out to see the movie. Made $30 million. His movies gross anywhere between $30 to $60
million. Right.
That's his range. And when he puts on a dress, he's in the $60 million. The Madea goes to jail. That's the best, $90 million.
And they gave him five, if that. Look, here's my thing. And I can't necessarily say it's either the dress or the man looks like trash. But only one I could say that didn't happen to, he really like flies. Like, I don't understand why Daddy's Little Girls didn't do it. But Why Did I Get Married?
Especially the first one.
I
saw a lot of flaws with his movie making, but I generally enjoyed that one.
Good Deeds
was cool.
Yeah.
That was cool. His latest ones have been better. I see him trying to get better. Good Deeds, I've seen him trying to get better.
Dude, Madea's Christmas.
I have never watched a Madea movie in my life. You know, I'm not doing it.
I will
give a dude a chance on some things, but I am not going to contribute to his tucking. He wants to tuck. Let him have at it. I'm not paying to see a man
talk.
I'm good.
I got you. Now, I can understand that. I'm just curious as to, you know, like the last thing he did was the Madea's Christmas. And now, again, the dude's a hard worker. I'll give him that. He has like, what, five, six shows on at once? Like, I mean, the dude does work. He puts black actors to work.
All right. And what did you want to know about Madea's Christmas? What it made?
Yeah. I know it was garbage, but what it made?
No, I mean, you want to know what it grossed. It grossed $43 million.
And they gave him $3 million.
Is that what's the budget? $3
million? I'm guessing. I'm usually, but you know,
no,
his
I think his budget is like 15 to 20 mil.
Now?
Not dependent on
the movie.
I mean,
that's what I'm saying. That movie couldn't have been 15 million.
I do not know.
Yeah, I got to look that up.
We'll ask our guest who entered the building. He's in the building, y'all.
Okay, yeah. So shouts out to my man. He's in there waiting to come on for the next hour where we're going to be continuing our conversation with this. Again, everybody who's either in the chat room or waiting to chime in, man, 818-514-1202. Press the number 1 to join the conversation. Ask your question about any black filmmaker. If you agree with what we're saying about Tyler,
if you
or
disagree
with what
please
we're saying
call
about
in.
Tyler.
There's people
I
who
mean,
love Tyler.
If you look, we'll listen. There's yeah. not we won't always come back with a rebuttal and say you're wrong. That's not
no,
what we do.
We want to hear what you got to say.
It's
that's not
opinion.
A problem. There's some people, if you like Madea's Christmas, call us up and tell us why.
It's all an opinion. You cannot be wrong with an opinion. If somebody asked me, can you beat Michael Jordan, I would say yes. Is it an opinion? Yes.
Sure.
So how can I be wrong?
And whether we like his movies or not, you can't beat the track record. You
yes,
can't beat
that,
the track record. You can't fade his track record.
But
so there it is.
And my whole thing is that's my point, dude. Your feet are cemented in Hollywood right now. You have... Remember what we were saying about Kanye? Where he could say he has his own Kanye. I mean Kanye. Common. Where am I at right
yeah,
now?
Yeah, I have no
Chicago artist. I was going to say Lupe next, but nah. Tyler Perry has the ability to put what he wants to put out. He has his own studio. The man has a jet. And Spike Lee broke down to me: for a man to have a jet, you got to be able to call your own shots. Tyler Perry can call his own shots, which means, dude, just give. If you don't, people are going to follow you regardless. No matter what you do, you're gonna have a following regardless. It's the same as these paranormal followings, those Saul followings. Saul got garbage after the first one, but people stay going to see those Saul movies because there's a cult following.
Mm-hmm.
Tyler Perry has a cult old woman following, and some of the new.
He's got a core audience. When you got a core audience, you can. They know that if I put this out again, he knows I put this out. You're getting anywhere from 30 to 60 minutes.
But my thing,
depending on what it is,
you got Spike Lee, who had a core following.
He still got one.
Just saying, take you on a ride with every movie he did, but. I digress. We'll tap in on the other end of that on the second half hour of True Brothers Radio.
With our special guest, Floyd Webb.
Yes.
True Brothers Radio.
If you ask me, Trey Songz is the best singer in the world.
Girl, have you heard Chris Brown?
Thank you. Okay, whatever. All he talking about is strippers, money, slapping girls, and Lamborghinis.
But he's talking about sexual activity.
Okay, but who look better?
Chris Brown.
Whatever.
No. What about Justin Bieber?
He's gay.
Exactly.
That's not right, girls.
Wow, it's Yvonne from Truth Brothers Radio.
My mom hates him.
That's right. And using words like gay to insult someone is socially wrong and offensive. Use words like poop booty, skittle bag, wrist down, lady boys,
fairies, sweetness, drag queens, switch hitters, ass burglars, white beards, something like that.
They survived. Now we know.
And no one will keep y'all asses out the liquor store. Two fingers.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Truth Brothers Radio. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the second hour of Truth Brothers. I'm Ray.
And I'm Devon.
And we are the Truth Brothers. The number to give us a call is 818-514-1202. That's 818-514-1202.
And as always, you guys know you can hit us up at our email at wewanttruth@att.net and truthbrosradio@gmail.com. And it's still truth is spelled T-R-U-F.
And we got the chat room wide open, and feel free to step on in there and start making your comments, mingling around. Movie.
We are finna get into, I hate that word, finna. We are about to get into movies with our special guest. This man was raised on the south and west side of Chicago, so
right.
Of course he was known, you know.
He's bilingual.
He gets that. He can tap into our south side and the west side roots, guns up. But, no, for real. This man who was raised on the south and west side of Chicago with a background that includes cinema, photojournalism, publishing, and advertising. His past work includes he was associate producer of the award-winning Julia Dash film Daughters of the Dust, a local producer of the American Master film The World of Nat King Cole. Man, I got to find that. Producer of the director and music videos, short documentaries, and 3D animation projects. So he's like Avatar in that.
There it is.
Most recently, though, he assisted director John on a BBC ITVS documentary on the 50th anniversary on the March on Washington. That's crazy, right? Ladies and gentlemen, we want y'all to put y'all hands together, give a warm Truth Brothers welcome to our guest of the evening, Mr. Floyd Webb.
Hey, hello. How you doing?
I heard him that.
Yeah,
day.
I heard him.
You
Floyd.
Hello.
Mr. Webb.
Was it Nat King Cole?
Floyd? There you go. Hello?
All right, he's
still there. I don't know what's going on. Let me try it again here.
Yeah, let's see what we
can
this do.
Hey, this is big time radio. This is what happens.
And it's live.
Hey, Mr. Webb? Okay. He's there. I don't know. We lost him.
Oh, I'm sure he'll
yeah.
find his way home. Yeah. So anyway, back to what I was saying, I think Big Brother had tapped in on that as far as the movie making as well when we got into Tyler Perry. Like I Wikipedia'd it real quick and I found out that it said that Tyler budget for the Madea's Christmas was $25 million and he made like $52.5 million off it, whatever. That's what I Wikipedia'd. And this was from a couple of days ago. But okay. Long story short.
There we go. Yep.
Long story short.
Mr. Webb.
Long story short.
He TikTok.
Yeah, that made my Beats by Dre boss. But anyway, like I was saying, let's get into these black films and everything that we may see coming out or that's been out recently or in past times that
right.
A lot of people have not grasped onto. One movie that I actually wanted to bring up. Did you get it?
Yeah, I'm still trying to get him, so keep
yeah, no,
keep I'll, going. 818-514-1202 is the number. Feel free to call in. We want to know what's your favorite black movie and what's the worst black movie you've ever seen. We want to hear about some of all of that.
Well, first off, before we get it, my favorite black movie of all time would be It's a toss-up between Malcolm X, which I absolutely love that movie, thanks to Spike Lee, or it would be, I can't even remember the name of it. We'll just ride with Malcolm X. The worst black movie I've seen of all time, and I hate to say it now because I absolutely love this dude right now, is Soul Plane. That has to be the worst movie I've ever seen.
Really?
In my life. Yeah, that's
your
the
call
worst.
Has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system. 7087.
You might want to cut that off. Calling. They're going to be Floyd. It's us.
Right. You know, what happened?
The worst, like I said, so
there
plain.
We go. Let's try it again.
Hello?
Floyd. Yeah. Doing.
Am I here?
Yeah, you're there, man. Welcome to Truth Brothers.
Okay. I know it takes a minute. It's technology, brother. It's technology.
Right.
It's new to us all. Don't worry about it.
So how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Can you, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself? How long have you been directing and producing?
Well, more years than I want to think. You know, I've always been interested in film since I was a kid, but one of the things that happens when, you know, like growing up in the projects, growing up on the West Side, you have to know people doing these types of things in order to be encouraged. Because sometimes when you don't have that kind of influence and exposure, you end up doing something else. So I became a still photographer because I had a teacher who was a still photographer. But I had been interested in film, man, since I was about 8, and I started it in college and, you know, avoided. But I was always involved in some kind of motion, you know, like I shot Super 8 film of like, you know, anti-war demonstrations and school demonstrations when I was in high school, you know. So I've always done it, and you know, I've always been sort of a multimedia kind of person, you know, and just waiting for the chance. And the chance was digital. That's where I really began this. So I started doing this around 1980 when I discovered QuickTime. But I was working with Chicago filmmakers, and I got involved in, about the mid-80s I started doing this. Right. And so by the beginning of the 90s, I had moved back to England, and I was working with fine artists like Dave McKean, who had done a bunch of work with Neil Gaiman on the Mr. Punch DVD and on Mirror Mask. You know, so I was working with that cat. I put in an apprenticeship with him when I was living in England, and I worked for a company called Mesh 3D. You know, so I've been at this, you know, a minute, you know, so. And I was apprenticed myself to a documentary filmmaker named St. Clair Bourne. People need to know that name because he did some real important documentary work from the 1960s until the 90s. He's St. Clair Bourne, B-O-U-R-N-E. People need to look that up. This brother did some incredible documentaries. You know, he died about 5 years ago suddenly, you know. But, yeah, man, so I've been out here for a minute.
Right. Okay. Right. And you know what? That leads me into my first question because me, myself, I'm an avid documentary person. I love watching a good documentary. And then what is exactly the difference between filming like a movie or a docudrama versus a straight-up documentary?
Well, you know, any documentary can become a docudrama, you know what I mean? Like, a good documentary's got drama in it, you know. It's a matter of intent, you know what I mean? It's like, what is it that you want out of this thing? Because if you're going to tell a good story, the good story is, no matter what the story is, whether it's a documentary or fiction, you have to have a good story, and a good story is going to have drama. But if you begin to dramatize things, then that's a whole other question, and that requires a different kind of logistics too, you know. But you know, it really depends on your intent, you know. Does that make sense to you?
You know,
filmmaking, man, like any kind of creative work is always a matter of intent. You know, it's about what is your real underlying purpose. You know, is it to Is it to transmit purely transmit information in a way that is engaging to the individual that's watching it? Do you want to provoke action out of them? Do you want to purely entertain them? You know, it's like what do you want? How do you want to tell this story? You know, I'm stuck on a story now that I've been doing for a long time, right? And it's and there's a lot of drama in it. But when I did the thing, I didn't want to make it. You know, I was a little bit skeptical because, you know, people died in this story and the people's families were still alive, and I wanted to be real sensitive to how I dealt with that, you know, that there were surviving people and that there were people alive from this tragedy that happened, you know, and I didn't want to, you know, and I didn't want to be a person. I wanted to be sensitive enough to the feelings of the family of that person, right? And,
right.
And luckily they got in touch with me to let me know that what I wanted to do was okay, you know, because they were all about the truth, you know. Or the truth,
right?
I want to say that. Yeah.
Okay. Let me ask you. The past 2 years have been considered very good for quote unquote black movies lately. They've seemed to have been getting a lot of what Hollywood would call success. But why does it seem to be so hard to keep black movies going no matter what time of year or phase we happen to be in politically, socially, or whatever? And how come it seems like it's very hard for black filmmakers to go out on a limb to make something daring? I mean, this year they're considering 12 Years a Slave as like some of the most daring filmmakers that's been in like a generation, let them tell it. But to me, it was like
Django too.
Well, I ain't going to go that far, I would say, you know, Roots, I mean, we kind of not been there, done that, but this is a topic that's not foreign to us. I don't know what was so daring about it, but I mean, it was a good story.
Well, let's really look at it, right? Let's really look at it, right? I mean, like, first of all, there's a context of 12 Years a Slave that people really don't get because people tend not to study history, and we're not really taught history very well. 12 Years a Slave was a propaganda tool of the abolitionist movement. Okay, the abolitionist movement was a legal movement to end the institution of Southern slavery, of Southern captivity, because I don't like to use the word slave, of this illegal and immoral captivity, right? They wanted to remove the illegal and immoral activity captivity of these people because of the fact that it was a danger to the existence of the empire, okay? Why was it a danger to the existence of the empire? Because the British had designs on recovering the colonies that they lost in 1776, right? Mm-hmm. Because America, as far as the rest of the world, because of their practice of holding an entire population of people captive, made them the biggest hypocrites, right? This was a global issue, right? Especially after the liberation of Haiti, you know? There's a book Gerald Horn wrote last year called Negro Comrades of the Crown that has to do with the war against slavery before the Civil War that was being essentially carried out by the British, right? The British was like picking up all these runaway slaves and all these freed slaves and putting them in their army. In the War of 1812, when the White House was burned down, it was black troops working for the British who did that stuff, who were former slaves, right? All the gun laws, everything we have today is based upon the fact that the white population of America feared the retribution of the Negro slave who had escaped and wanted to come back and get their families, right? Canada only exists today because of those black troops that were runaway slaves and freed slaves who had decided they were going to fight against the American empire, right? And see, this is the context that 12 Years a Slave, the book was written, right? Because at the time, the whole reason Solomon Northup was kidnapped was because the British had outlawed slavery. They were hunting down slave ships on the open seas and returning these people to Africa, right, or drop them off in the West Indies someplace. There was a shortage of slaves, and that's why they were kidnapping these people, see. There's a whole history that we don't get. There's a whole thing that's, you know, there's no way to do it in that context because we have to assume that people know something, but really in America we just don't really know that much about our own history. So this thing, this tract, the abolitionists wanted a legal ending of like African captivity. That's what they wanted to see because it was endangering the entire empire. It was endangering the Union itself. So it had to end, you know. And when they were able to free the captive Africans, that eliminated the threat from England because now England didn't have any allies. Because if England had have invaded the U.S., whose side do you think the 3 million slaves that were in the United States were going to be on? Since every Negro in the United States knew that the British, and they made sure, the British made sure that they knew that that they had ended slavery on the high seas, you know? So, I mean, that's the context that this book grows out of. And this is something that nobody has really talked about. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because context and history is everything, right? So basically, this was a book that was made to soften the hearts of white people towards slavery. You know that that book is a bestseller right now, right? Because
yeah.
White people don't believe that it was that bad. And when they go to the book, they found out they left a whole lot of stuff out of that movie that's in that book, you know? I mean, like, when you look at Solomon Northup, you know who was Solomon Northup? Solomon Northup is the ideal. He's the, I hate to quote one of these right-wingers, but he's the magical Negro, right?
Exactly.
He plays violin. He has a beautiful family. He lives an idyllic life, you know, in the North, which is bogus, actually. And when he's thrown into this, white people identify with him because he's from where they're from, you know. He's from the same idyllic world that they live in that's separate from captivity, right? So when he gets down there, you know, see, for me, when I read the book when I was in high school, for me the book was less about Solomon Northup than it was about Patsy, man. Because Patsy, man, because if Patsy didn't make you understand the struggle and the strength of black women in this country, nothing would. You know what I mean? I mean, like, that man, that book gave me, man, I mean, you know, Patsy's experience gave me pause, you know, because what everything that people had told me about slavery, you know, all my grandparents, you know, my grandfather lived to like 101, right? His father was born in slavery, you know. So when people tell us, oh, man, slavery was a long time ago, no, it wasn't because my grandfather's father was in that, right? Like, I didn't ever meet him, but, you know, my grandfather was born in the 1880s, man. He was born in the 1880s, you know, like 20 years after slavery was ended. And he came up through Reconstruction, you know, winning the World War One. But see, this book and this film, the film is really a hit because it was effective as a piece of abolitionist propaganda, you know? And I'm not saying that it's bad because it's propaganda. I think it did exactly what it was supposed to do. It helped set the stage for the Civil War. So during the same time that they were writing 12 Years a Slave, what was going on? John Brown was playing at Harper's Ferry.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
And John Brown, you know what I mean? There's all of this backstory that we don't get, you know? There's all this stuff that changes. I mean, like, not a whole lot of people know that the Abraham Lincoln film that was a big hit last year or the year before, when that screenplay was originally written, it's written by the same guy who wrote Gladiator. When that screenplay was originally written, it was about the friendship between Frederick Douglass and Abraham Lincoln. You know?
You
know what I mean?
Radio. Yep, we are on with filmmaker and producer Floyd Webb. We're talking to you guys. Join in 818-514-1202 is the number. Join in and I'll ask the man a question. You got somebody? We got a caller right now. 312 on with the Truth Brothers. What's your name? 312. Guess they was gonna send it to you in code.
Call back. We'll get to you with your question. My question is, go ahead.
Yeah, but anyway, like I threw all that out there, man, because I want to give people something to think about when we talk about films, you know, especially historical films, man. There's a context that is missed because we don't know this material. You know what I mean? We don't know. We should know this material already, right? Now let's talk about how the film got done, okay? Now, I heard something really interesting a couple of weeks after the film came out. I heard some filmmakers complaining that all the stars and the director of the film were African, and there were no African Americans involved. You know? Now let me put something to y'all. Now that book has been here years. Now Gordon Parks did this film back in 1984. Man, I knew Gordon Parks, right? We argued about this. We argued about Solomon Northup's Odyssey. He made this. You can find it on YouTube. It was called Solomon Northup's Odyssey, right? And my argument with Parks was that he really didn't do what the book was supposed to do. But Gordon's thing, you know, Gordon was an accommodationist in a way. I loved him dearly, but he was he was older cat, and he came up at a time when he didn't want to get white people too mad. He came up at a time when some of us thought we had something to prove. You know, so that film came out. It starred Avery Brooks, who did a very good job in that role. You know, and it was interesting to look at it. And he did like the soft version of this film, right? Now he did the soft version, right? Now why do we have this version? First of all, this film, Steve McQueen was hired to do this film. He didn't choose this film to do, okay? The guy who produced the film, his name is Jeremy Kleiner, okay? Now, Jeremy Kleiner is a young white cat, came from the East Coast, but there's something real interesting about him. His high school teacher was the star of Daughters of the Dust, okay? So he's always been fascinated by the images that he saw in Daughters of the Dust, right? And when he first came to L.A., he met with Julie Dash, and I happened to be out there hanging out with Julie back then. And he was anxious to do something with her. He was anxious to do something black, right? So he disappears. He ends up working. Now, when Kleiner got to L.A., he had his own brokerage firm. It's probably through his family or something. So when he got to L.A., he had money. So he disappears, and he turns back up. He's Brad Pitt's money man. He's the financial guy at Plan B Pictures, you know? And he's the one who got Steve McQueen to do this film, you know? And that's why Brad Pitt is in it, because Jeremy had this idea of doing something that related or that was like a continuation of the images that he saw, and to like dig into that greater truth. And that greater truth for him as a young white cat was this book, Solomon Northup's Odyssey, you know? And that's the origins of that thing. Now, that book's been around for years. How come ain't no other African-American filmmakers tried to do it? You know what I mean? It was there.
So
they
wouldn't dare take that film
wouldn't dare take that film to Hollywood and try to get them to do that book, right?
Because
why
that
is that?
Because that was a little too raw and daring, which actually leads
there you
to
go.
Question. Why does it seem like when we're doing something that's supposedly edgy and supposedly raw, we are either A, making something about everybody shooting each other up in the hood, or we're making something raw and edgy that's supposed to be the help or either the butler? It seems like it's just like too extreme.
It ain't nothing edgy about that. What it is it's comfortable.
It's comfortable, right?
If you want to talk edgy, right? Like, if you want to talk edgy, let's just go on and admit it, right? Tarantino got edgy with Django. Okay, that shit was edgy. I don't care what nobody says. You can like it or dislike it, but that shit was edgy. Anytime you got the white boy dying to save the brother and his woman, that's some edgy shit. Because I ain't seen that before in film.
Does that constitute as edgy? I mean, those movies almost, I don't want to say it happened all the time, but to say that the dude...
They don't happen all the time. They don't happen. Come on, man. Be honest. From a
standpoint as a guy, I mean, it's not about the I don't think the part that made that edge is because the white dude died. I mean, in a sense, it's just...
No. It ain't just because the white guy dies. It ain't just because of that. It's the whole thing that they allow Fred Williamson to return. The Legend of Nigga Charlie comes back because you know that's where this stuff is coming from. Because you know all Tarantino does is samples. He's from the sample generation. All he does is sample and regurgitate what Fred Williamson did back in the 1970s with all the westerns that he did, right? Matter of fact, I had some students watch that film, but I told them, go watch all the old Fred Williamson, watch Legend of Nigga Charlie, Sidney Poitier, Harry Belafonte Western. Watch all that stuff and then go see that movie. When they did, you know what they saw? The sets were just like the ones that were in all those old blaxploitation Westerns. Or that's what you call them, blaxploitation Westerns. Fred Williamson did this stuff first. All Tarantino did was resample it and give it back in his Tarantino language.
Maybe I'm thinking it as a different aspect because when I think of edgy, I think of movies like I Spit on Your Grave. That was an edgy movie. I mean, it's not a black edgy movie, but it's edgy to that aspect. So it's like, I don't know. So Django was like a Western, I don't even want to say feel good. I don't even know how
it's
to
just
describe
a big, like you said, it was a regurgitated B movie.
Right. And that's
with Tarantino.
But the thing about regurgitated movies is that sometimes you ain't seen that in 20 years. So when you ain't seen it in 20 years, it ain't about me and what I think of it. It's about what the rest of the audience out here thinks of, right?
No.
Right.
I can think what I want to. But like, how many millions of dollars of people went to see it?
Yep.
You know what I mean? So it's about so you got a whole generation that ain't seen it. They ain't never been exposed to this stuff. I mean, I'm old enough to have seen everything back to the mid-50s, right?
Right. But it was like you say, it was regurgitated in the black exploitation form, which made it retro and cool. But to me, Rosewood is far more edgier than
right.
Django
that's,
will
that's
ever be. That's edgy.
But
to
Rosewood.
Me.
But wait a minute. See, here we go again. See, you know, and this is where I get like, I'm going on 60, okay? I'm born in Mississippi in the 50s, in the early 50s. Right?
Uh-huh.
So I have come through the real-life version of all this shit, right? So when you give me something like Rosewood or even Malcolm X, you know, the thing that I see, because I was a political person in my young life, starting from, you know, 12 years old, marching with Martin Luther King and Gage Parker, seeing him get hit in the head with a rock. Put the end to my any interest in nonviolence that I had, right? So you tell me that these things are edgy. First of all, the politics in these films is the stories are interesting, but the politics are weak, right? The image of our rebellions are always undermined because the people doing the films a lot of the time ain't got the politics to even they don't have the political chops. You know, it's like a cat playing jazz that they never learned blues. And ever learn blues scales.
Go ahead. To a point, you have to do some form of studying to do those things. Now, I'm not saying they're on point with everything that they do, but you have to do your work at least a little bit to do a movie, to do it. It's I don't even want to call it a documentary as far as Malcolm X or
See what happened. Here's the thing, right? Let's go back and look at the essential political cinema, right? I got a list. You know, after Malcolm X came in, I did a film of essential political cinema for us to learn from in order to understand how to make political cinema, right? one of the first films I came up with, because I went back and looked at all of these directors from the late 50s through the beginning of the 70s, through the mid-70s, who did political cinema, who did, like, revolutionary cinema, you know? And, like, first I go to Cuba, right? And I look at Sergio Herrera, and I look at his trilogy of slavery, you know, Malawala, the other Francisco, and Ranchador, right? People don't even know these films were done, but we saw these films in the 70s. But these films, man, were the most political. I mean, you can get Malawala online. Malawala. It's by Sergio Herrera. S-E-R-G-I-O. His last name is G-I-R-A-L, right? These films, this is where we learn about, and this is a black filmmaker. This is a black Cuban filmmaker doing films about, one film is about a rebel slave community. One film is about a novel written about slavery, you know, told from the position of the writer, the romantic position of the writer, and then reinterpreted by one of the captive, one of the captive Africans in the story itself, right? He reworks the story, tells what really happened. And then the other one is Ranchador, is about a slave hunter, you know, and about how he's empowered by the planters, but he goes crazy out there, and they have to put an end to him as well as the captive slaves, because he just loses his mind out there chasing all these slaves. You know, he's a paddy roller, right? Then there's another series. Then there's a film called Quemada, right? Quemada is made, Marlon Brando stars in this film, right? And it was made by the same guy who made The Battle of Algiers. His name doesn't come to mind right now. But he made The Battle of Algiers. And the thing that's interesting about this is that all of these people who made these films are films like Z's, a film like Z, which was Costa Gavros, you know, films like the Tupamaros, you know, all of these South American films. The thing that's real interesting about it is these people were all activists before they became filmmakers, right? Some of them were members of the Communist Party in their respective countries, but they came from a position of activism, you know. They were activists, they were like culturalists, you know, and they brought a certain political position with them to the films, you know.
Yeah.
And
I'm going to take a real quick break, though. We'll take one real quick break and we'll be right back and let you delve into that a little bit more. But we'll be right back. We got to take a really, really quick break, fellas. And Jen and ladies, we'll be back. Truth Brothers Radio.
Truth Brothers Radio.
Oh, I'ma give it to ya with no trivia. Roll like cocaine straight from Bolivia. My hip hop will rock and shock the nation like the Emancipation Proclamation. We MC approach with flame to set. Am I the runner to the wall and bang your head? I put the force, my force is doubting. I make the devil's tower to the Caucasus Mountain.
When I'm Messiah, I set the microphone on fire. Rap sounds Barry and carry like Mariah. I come from the Shaolin slum and the Alan funk is coming through with nothing. And I'm guns, so if you wanna come sweating, stressing contesting, you gotta start towards the midsection. Don't talk the talk.
Truth Brothers Radio.
Are you ironic? Do you have a beard? Are you currently wearing jeans that you stole from your little sister's wardrobe and a V-neck lower than the U.S. economy? If so, talk to your doctor. If you are experiencing some, none, or all of these symptoms, you may be suffering from hyperinvolutory panic stress and tension elevation response disorder, or HIPSTER. HIPSTER affects men and women between the ages of 16 and 35 and is one of the leading causes of scarf wearing, blogging, buying vinyl, and ordering fair trade. In extreme cases, HIPSTER can be found in men as old as 40 living in their mom's basement. Good news, there is hope. Introducing Unpretentiousil. Unpretentiousil stops douchebaggery at its root. Unpretentiousil works by locating and attacking neuroreceptors in the brain that control your need to look, act, and think differently than everyone else, ultimately resulting in your looking, acting, and thinking the same as everyone else. Unpretentiousil has been scientifically and clinically proven to effectively stop the following symptoms: apathy, lack of hygiene, frequent visits to the Apple Store, talking about your bike, making things at home which can easily be bought at a local supermarket, putting glasses on your cat, putting birds on things, putting mustaches on things, being vegan, iTunes downloads of Bon Iver, Arcade Fire, and that band your friends have never heard of, hashtag Twitter, hashtag Instagram, hashtag Facebook, hashtag MySpace, hashtag Pinterest, hashtag Tumblr, and hashtag. Talk to your doctor to see if Unpretentiousil is right for you. Do not take on pretentiosil. You are prone to spontaneous human combustion, have severe color blindness, have recently been diagnosed with gout or the plague, or if you are allergic to change. Do what is right for you. Talk to your doctor and call now for a free trial. Unpretentiosil. Because isn't it time to be a real person? Unpretentiosil, now available in 3 new flavors, PBR, Natty Light, and Soy.
Truth Brothers Radio.
This song totally sucks. This song totally sucks.
Paula's free.
Truth Brothers, Truth Brothers Radio. We're back. We're talking movies with our special guest, our producer and director, Floyd Webb. And, man, you just got a film history of edgy movies from back in the day.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask a question, or basically propose a question, as like we was talking about edgy movies. And I vaguely remember Mr. Webb saying that, you know, he was brought up in the 50s or whatever. And like I said, to me, it's times and evolution cause things to change. And it's like even what's tolerated as far as what's being allowed on screen has changed. So a lot of times the modern movie they go, or the everyday movie they go now, might not think what's edgy during the 50s. It would constitute as edgy to what's common today.
That right.
No, we just see this stuff differently, man. I mean, you know, like, look, we can go back 100 years, right? We talking the same stuff. You know, I went to the library and pulled up The Defender. And I said, let me go back 100 years. I went back to 1914, right? We started pulling up articles about race movies. They called them race movies back then, right? You know, Chicago was the birthplace of race movies in a whole lot of ways. Very first race film were made by a guy named William Foster, who worked for the Chicago Defender. Yeah. And he set up the Foster Motion Picture Company on 31st and State Street. And he was financed by the owner of the Chicago Defender. He did a film called The Railroad Porter. This was before Oscar Michelle. Chicago was like the center of motion pictures before Hollywood. Charlie Chaplin came here. You know, we had... We had a lot of silent. You know, they moved from Chicago out to L.A. for better weather. But black filmmakers hung around here. There was a Lincoln Motion Picture Company that started out later. Started about 5 years after William Foster started his company. It was called the Lincoln Motion Picture Company. You know, and actually, the Lincoln Motion Picture Company had wanted to do Oscar Michel's films, but Oscar wanted to direct. And they told him he was a writer. He didn't know nothing about directing. And Oscar said, guess what? I don't need y'all. Oscar went back up to South Dakota, went to them white folks who was all around his farm where he was sharecropping when he wrote this book, and they financed his first film called The Homesteader, you know? And this is, you know, so we got this black cinema history in Chicago that a lot of people really don't know about, but they don't recognize it. They just haven't learned about it, right? And, like, we haven't really been that adamant about promoting that history too, you know, but when you go back and you look at these newspaper articles, man, you see that black cinema is seen. The whole argument is about what can cinema do for the race, you know. It's about they want films that are uplifting for the race, right? That's the reason Oscar Michelle came out with. Everything Oscar Michelle did had to do with the condition and rising out of those conditions that we were forced into by American apartheid. You know, it's only later he begins to do like mindless musicals and things. But his first four or five films, you know, with Star Gates, you know, his silent films, man, are real interesting. They're flawed, But you know, every film is flawed. There are no perfect films, you know.
True.
But it's about the intent, you know. So when we start talking about edgy, like, all that stuff really don't matter, because the thing about it is, what does the audience take away from the film, right? What does the general audience, those of us, you know, the people who purely want to be entertained, because, you know, they say, you know, I was talking to somebody one day, and they said, you know, when we talk about cinema, the one thing you've got to realize is that if it ain't popular, it ain't political, right? Like, what do we do to make our films popular, right? The politics that are expressed in a Tyler Perry film are different from the politics expressed in a Spike Lee film, you know? It's different from the politics expressed in a film by Charles Burnett, who's probably one of the greatest African-American filmmakers to live, you know? So it's like the conversation we need to be having, to be quite honest, is about not black cinema as necessarily a racial cinema, but as a national cinema. And at best, a global diasporic cinema.
Right. So
that has no investment.
That's a good point. So question.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. My next question would be, what do black movies today then add in the conversation of a national cinema then?
Well, this is the thing. We haven't had a movement. You know what I mean? It's like when the French decided they wanted to do their own films and they wanted to do a new, they had a movement, right? You had a bunch of people who came who were film critics who studied American film, watched all global cinema, and then they came with like new wave cinema, with the French new wave, right? See, we don't have a movement, you know. We ain't had much of a movement or anything since the mid 70s, really, you know. The last movement we had was to get President Obama elected, you know, and you know, well, we won't get into that. So,
okay.
So
then let me get into this then, because a lot of people feel that the movement right now would embody what Tyler Perry is doing. I want to ask your opinion.
Well, we don't have a movement. What we have is a popular cinema that's fueled by Hollywood, that is fueled and promoted by Hollywood, right? This is what they want us to see. It ain't what we want to see, or else people wouldn't be complaining the way they are. Now, Tyler Perry has his audience. There's enough to go around for everybody, right? I don't, you know, I have no opinion about Tyler Perry's movies. Seriously, none whatsoever. I have an opinion about what we can do as an alternative to what he does, right?
As a balance.
We have enough people that, look, all any of us need is 100,000 people to see whatever film we do, right? If we can get 100,000 people to pay $8 to see what we do, you know, and we have to stop thinking in Hollywood terms, right? Every film ain't going to make $100 million or $40 or $50 million, right? First of all, you ain't going to be able to get $20 million to make your film. You know what
exactly.
I mean? Let's be honest. We, you know, it's like we got to think like Jim Jarmusch. We got to think like John Sayles, right? These cats who go out and raise $2 and $3 million to make their films, right? They make their films, they get them distributed, make enough money to live, and go back and make another movie. You know, this is how people have to begin to think. You have to have a love for cinema. That's the first thing, man. Two things you need in order to be a filmmaker. You got to have something to say, and you must love cinema as an artistic form.
Okay, right.
Because if you don't love it, you ain't going to do it. You know what I mean?
Right. And I agree with what you said.
And if your only motivation is to get rich, and the chances of you getting rich ain't that great.
But the rich ones,
you'll soon be gone.
The rich ones already, I think, are the ones who are massively distributing these products anyway. So I mean, and they are making quality material. Go ahead.
No. What he was saying though is on point. Every movie isn't designed to make $100 million, and Hollywood has a system of using the big budget movies to fuel the artistic movies that will put the cinema forward.
Absolutely.
No. It's the other way around. Hollywood uses all of these other little films that they make that don't make a whole lot of money to fuel the big budget movies, right? Their overhead is covered by that other, by, you know, like how many blockbusters come out a year? Only about four or five, right?
So what about all the other films that are out there that ain't making a whole lot of money? They make enough money to get by, and they cover overhead, right? That money for these big budget films is borrowed money a whole lot of times. It's borrowed money, right? Because the rest of these films ain't making no money. You know, this is the whole deal. When people tell me black films don't make money, man, we can go to the movies. We can go out to the suburbs to the movie, man, and start looking at stuff and see how much money they're actually making, right? If you go to Variety and look at these things and you look at the disparity between the blockbusters and some other little teen film out there, you know, those animations, those Disney films will make millions because Disney's got the money. They've got the money and the theaters. They can put their films into 10,000 theaters. You know, but most black films ain't going to get 5,000 theaters, right? They'll be lucky if they get 1,000 theaters. Now, I don't know how many theaters Tyler Perry gets, but it's far and in between if you get that. Even some of the blockbusters, they don't get 1,000 theaters. You know what I mean? It's like we've been looking. You know, when we look at this, we have to stop looking at it through the Hollywood lens. If we're going to make movies, we must stop looking at film through a Hollywood lens. We have to look at it.
What constitutes as a blockbuster? In your opinion, what constitutes as a blockbuster?
Well, I'm gonna be honest, man. I have no interest in blockbusters. I have interest in a sustainable film industry that's making significant cinema on a week-to-week, month-to-month, year-to-year basis.
Right.
That's what I'm interested in, right? Because a blockbuster is going to be far and in between. And the thing about it is you don't have the infrastructure to even sustain a blockbuster. Who's going to distribute a blockbuster? Right? Who's going to distribute your blockbuster, right? Where do you have to go to do that, right? Let's say I make art films, right? I know 3,000 theaters around the world. Square business. I know 3,000 theaters around the world that will take my art film.
Okay? Absolutely.
Okay, around the world, but big because I'm going to go global, right? But if I want to make an Avatar or something, there ain't but one place you can go.
Where?
And what's the chance of getting in there with your Avatar?
Because they have
to recognize it. Because are they going to recognize it? Is that? But we don't even have an entree. Most of us, 99.99% of us, don't even have access to that, black or white, right? So when we talk about Hollywood, it's a distraction from the work we really need to be doing.
I mean, true. Now, I
so you're saying that maybe like the blockbuster and the summer movies don't have a place in actual cinema, or you're saying that they're just
I'm talking about the black cinema. Us discussing blockbusters don't serve nobody. It don't serve us. I mean, look. Here's an example. We talk about a $100 million film. How much of that money goes back to black community? Any of those films, right? You know, even Tyler Perry's film, how much of that film goes back into the black community? They don't. It doesn't, you know? See, we don't have a sustainable cinema because we don't have a community that supports. We need a community of people that all this excess capital that we have, that we spend, that makes us richer than most nations in the world, right? We don't spend it among ourselves. We send it out of our community, right? We have enough resources in our community not to ever hear from anybody from Hollywood to make our films. But we haven't mastered that. You know, we haven't even touched the tip of the iceberg on that. Right? What is the potential for mass investment, for crowdfunding of alternative black cinema? These are the questions we need to be asking.
Okay,
I'm sorry, but useless discussion about Hollywood blockbusters that don't serve us. You know, it doesn't help us. You know, all the conversations that we have. Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. My question would be for to come into fruition of what you're talking about. How do you turn on to the type of cinema that you're talking about? Because when you talk movies, people are going to talk Hollywood and Hollywood blockbusters, and then your Oscar-worthy movies and everything. They've got the whole system is set up into a season and a cycle where the Hollywood blockbusters come out, And then towards the end of the year, you got all the movies that they want that they know not going to make money, but they want to get Academy Award consideration and all of that. To the mass amount of people out there, black people included, this is what movies are. So a counterculture into that, how do you turn people on to this counterculture of cinema that you're talking about?
I've been doing a program in Chicago called Black World Cinema for 8 years. Okay. Before that, I did, for 12 years, I did a film called Blacklight, a festival of international black cinema, right? In Chicago, we probably have one of the most sophisticated black film audiences in the country because of the level of stuff, the different, the variety of cinema that we've shown them, right? The thing that I've learned from this is that there's a bunch of people out here who want to see this stuff.
I would agree.
I got people, you know, I got people, if you go to blackworldcinema.net, you'll see what we've done over the past 5 years, at least the past 5 years at the website, because we didn't do the website till 2 years after we started the program, right? But if you look at, the films at blackworldcinema.net, you'll see the type of stuff that we do, you know, and the responses that we get here are really good. We do the film once a month. We do the films, and I started doing this whole thing because I went to Hollywood when I was 17, 18 years old, and they told me that there was no audience for black film. Okay, that's what and these are black people who worked in the studios. There's no audience for black film, and I was like, that's crazy, you know. And then this was in 1971 that I went there, right? My thing was always to create a platform to develop a black audience for the types of films that I wanted to see. And that's why I started the Black Light Film Festival and did it for 12 years, right? The Black Light Film Festival became one of the key black film, was one of the early black film festivals in this country. And we had an international reputation, man. It's like people knew about Black Light from Chicago all the way to the Tokyo Film Festival. Because I went to all of these festivals and saw all of these films, right? Because I was looking for films every place, man. I brought back Japanese films that had black characters who were you know, a film called Dixieland Daimyo, about three guys who lead a plantation at the end of the Civil War. They try to go back to Africa, and then they end up on a ship, and they end up in Japan. In the middle of a Japanese Civil War during the Meiji Restoration, and on the way they invent jazz. It's a real kind of quirky film. You want to talk about edgy? This is an edgy, quirky film, man. It's done in the style of a bunruku puppet play, you know. And I would find films like that and bring back. Man, I found a film down in Brazil that was called The Devil Queen, about a transvestite gangbanging brother smoked a cigar that had a bevy of little beauty shop beauties, man, who ran the biggest marijuana gang in the city, right? As a midnight film. So we found all of these films, man, in order to develop an audience to say that there's an international presence and there's an international need for the films that we do, you know? And, like, it ain't no easy job, but it's a job that has to be done, you know. And the thing about it is people, is like in Chicago, we've proved, and it's expected here, man. People expect this kind of stuff here now, you know. And so we ended up starting an organization last year called Oju Image Collective. And I did this with a group of people that have theaters that have, you know, that do pretty much what I do from like, Seattle to Oakland, to Chicago, to South Carolina, to Paris, right?
Right.
To do significant black cinema in order to create a market, create a distribution platform for this work. We opened the Iceberg Slim film and the Angela Davis film. You know, the Iceberg Slim documentary. And we did the Angela Davis film. You know, and. And we did one more thing, and I can't remember what it was, you know. But see, we have to be about doing this stuff. If you go to OJUImageCollective.com, you can see what we're trying to do. If you go to BlackWorldCinema.net, you see what we're doing every month. You know, this
right.
month we're doing, you know, Black History Month. We went back and to look at some old black images in films. We got The World of Flesh and the Devil, which is a science fiction film starring Harold
right.
Belafonte, which he produced. Right. Next this coming week we're showing No Way Out, which is a Sidney Poitier film. His very first role from 1950 that's got some really interesting images in it, you know, that like you ain't seen before. And I'm not going to tell y'all what it is because you need to just investigate this stuff. No Way Out with Sidney Poitier and The World of Flesh and the Devil. Once again, they're flawed, but we definitely need this stuff in order to understand where we've come from so we know where we're going.
Before we get into anything else, man, I want you to talk about the project that you've been working on too. You've been talking about everybody else's project. We want to hear about the project you're doing too.
Okay. Well, one project I'm working on, man, I met a guy about 10 years ago. I was involved in martial arts, and I met a guy named John Timothy Keehan, who a few years after I met him in 1968, he had changed his name to Count Dante. Deadliest Man Alive, and he had ads in comic books where he promised to teach you the Denmark Death Touch, right? And, I had a karate instructor back then, man, who told me to stay away from Count Dante, but I had met him when I started studying with him. A guy named Gregory Jaco. Jaco was Lupe Fiasco's dad, right? Lupe was called Wasserloo back then. Huh?
We're real cool with Lupe's brother, Jaco, too. He's a law enforcement officer. Yeah, he's a good friend of True Brothers.
So I'm making that film because this guy, man, is interesting because in the 50s, if you wanted to learn martial arts, you couldn't learn martial arts, right? Count Dante comes along in 1961 and welcomes everybody. He's the only person to openly teach black and Hispanic students martial arts in the early 1960s. And he's excommunicated from the martial arts community because of that. And he don't get mad. His students kick everybody's butt in all the tournaments for the next 3 years until they change all the rules because they didn't have any weight classes back then. You fought who was on the list, right? So Count Dante's 4'5", people weighing 125 pounds, was beating up 6'5", 250 pound guys, you know. And this is, and Count Dante, man, the cat wore a cape, you know. He wore a cape. He had a pet lion, you know. All this kind of crazy stuff. But the other film, and I'm almost done with that film. The other film I'm working on is called Space Race. Space was the place, race was the problem. It's about the first two black astronauts in the 1960s. Who nobody really remembers anything about right now, okay? America basically lost the Cold War in space. You know, they did get to the moon, but the first black man in space was neither one of these guys. It was an Afro-Cuban brother who went up as a cosmonaut in 1980. The two brothers who had tried to be astronauts, one was appointed by his name is Ed Dwight. You can find him online. Ed Dwight is still alive. He was appointed as an astronaut trainee by John Kennedy, you know. And when Kennedy was killed, they drummed him out of the program, and he and they ended up threatening his life, and he resigned from the Air Force and disappeared, and turned up as a sculptor a few years later. He's a real interesting sculptor, and you can find him online, Ed Dwight Jr. Right. Then the next guy who became an astronaut was somebody from my neighborhood. On 23rd and State Street, a guy named Robert H. Lawrence, whose shadow I grew up in when I went to Haines School. And Robert had left. He was, you know, Robert was brilliant, man. Robert was a brilliant cat. He went into the Air Force after he left college and became a jet fighter pilot and trained the German Air Force in 1959. And in 1967, he was chosen as an astronaut, June of 1967. By December of 1967, he had died in a plane crash that he wasn't flying, you know. And there's something a little bit, you know, something a little bit shady about it.
you know, but I can't say too much about it because it's all going to come out in the film. But the film looks at the image of – it looks at the image of – the image or the idea of a black astronaut in the 1970s, why it was political and why people, not even black people, could imagine it. Because we had no place in science fiction. We had no place in the future, right? So I reexamined that whole idea of the black image, space, science fiction in the future.
Absolutely.
You know, going back to ancient Egypt, you know, looking at African cosmology, you know, examining the Afrofuturism of Sun Ra, you know. So we're going to go some different places in this film.
That sounds like it's going to be great, man. But we definitely want to thank you for tuning in tonight and us for and we really appreciate you coming through. You dropped a whole lot of knowledge on us.
A whole lot.
I hope
it's decipherable.
They'll get it.
Oh, trust me, yeah.
Everybody who's listening will get it because they'll be able. I'm sure they're just sitting there right now no more. So, again, thank you so much, Mr. Webb, for coming in, tuning in with us.
Yep, and that'll do it for us. We'll be back next week when we will tackle the topic that we was going to do before we got killed by the snowstorm, which will be the miseducation of the American. So, hey, maybe our man Floyd would like to come in and check that out, too, because we're going to have a little fun busting open some stereotypes on that, too. So, another one in the can, man.
Yeah.
There you go.
It was a great one.
Yep. This has been a G-Network presentation, and we're going to let you know that if you're not listening to the Truth Brothers,
then the truth ain't in you.
Peace, y'all.
Two fingers.
Don't sweat the technique.